Welcome to the OSS, where we talk about the real stuff. We're a group of anonymous colleagues who get together every morning to chat about navigating adulthood and the often very controversial topics. We cover everything from relationships and careers to money and mental health. We're not experts, but we're honest, and we're not afraid to talk about the things that other people shy away from. So, if you're looking for a podcast that's raw, unfiltered, and honest, then this is the one for you. Join us for a weekly dose of real talk about the things that matter, one sunrise at a time. Good morning, good evening, and good afternoon to wherever you are in the world. Welcome back to the Sunrise Sessions and a happy new year to everyone. Once again, we are seated around the table at a very special location. Unfortunately, we can still not disclose that location. And today's topic is something I think we all need to discuss beginning of every single year, and that is type of work environments, the future of the workforce, and the future of working environments. We all come from a very wide, different array of spaces and experiences where I think as grown adults, you pick up immediately what works for you, what doesn't work for you. Coming out of COVID, we've kind of found a system that works, and it actually helps you reach your full potential, either as a working employee or as an individual in your own personal life. The discussion today is basically, how do we continue forward in 2024 in systems and ways that allow you to become a complete human being while not really stepping back into the ways of old, where we go back to a traditional 8 to 5, and a system where you are forced to clock in into the office, taking away from the quality of life we had all built up over the past 2 years. I'm just going to go around the table again and introduce our co-hosts. On my left, we've got...
How's it? My name is Jacob.
Hi, Jacob.
Hi, Jacob.
And next to Mr. Jacob, we've got...
Santana.
And then we've got a special guest who's joining us for the first time on the podcast.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brent, allegedly.
Awesome. Thank you very much for joining us, Brent. We know the issues we're facing here in the office space, especially in this building. And unfortunately, some of the issues are quite sensitive. So it's not things we want to delve too deep in, but it's things I think need to be spoken and need to be heard, because we live under this cloudy... this cloudy system where certain things are unspoken, especially with how employees are treated, what the system should be like, what the system shouldn't be like, and employees aren't really given the opportunity to challenge that system to create a healthy work environment for you. What are the issues you guys are facing at the moment before I throw mine? I've got a long list here.
I mean, for me, it's just adapting into a new space and figuring out my place in it. You know, that's always a teething process, no matter where you work or what industry you're in. You need to kind of figure out the dynamics as well as, you know, what are the norms and how you can contribute to it and if it will work for you.
Yeah, like how you can play your role in a meaningful way while still getting what you want out of your hours, out of the setup, like pleasing both yourself and your employer so that you can both be happy and so they're not like pissed off at the end of the day saying like, where have you been in this time slot? Immediately we were busy and we required somebody with your skill set, but you weren't present because you were busy dropping your kids or whatever. But at the same time, obviously you need that time to do what you need to do in your life, and that flexibility for employees is very valuable. Like the 9 to 5, I feel like that's corny and played out at this point. I think we should, like, ideally I would love that to be retired and more companies be open to flexi hours. Provided you get in your hours for that day, I think that's cool. As long as, like, people can still do what they need to do. Because, like, like me reflecting on this topic now, I remember there were times, particularly in winter, where because I commute via train, like I'd come in the morning, pitch dark outside, and then when I'm headed back home, like it's overcast as well, gets dark early as well, it's dark when I leave as well. So it's like I'm not seeing the sun for that day because like I'm coming in early and I'm leaving late, and like, you know, are you familiar with seasonal depression by chance? Like
I actually wanted to touch on that. I'm happy you raised it as well. I think the one thing with this archaic system, and that's the best way to put it, it's a very archaic system in terms of how we work here, especially in a digital environment. We work in a digital environment, and the idea of having a workforce there for a set amount of time takes away, like you're saying, from the amount of time you are commuting to the office and commuting back. Half of you, not even half of your day, a good 90% of the chunk is based in that work environment. It also goes to the question of, should also the commute time be something that's considered within a contractual base now?
Yeah.
If it is, I want that clarified.
Definitely.
I want that in black and white as well.
Discussed in your interview or rediscussed once you start at the company.
Yeah.
Or you let them say, because if you're not going to, it's going to have, I have multiple issues where I will be driving home and then a client will phone me. Or my manager would phone me, the client is looking for, but I literally left 20 minutes ago and now you're bothering me. I'm driving. Like, I don't understand that. I think that actually a good idea for me for this year. Probably have to discuss that with
workplace boundaries.
Definitely, you have to have that in place, because if not, you're going to go crazy.
And it's so interesting because, well, it's not interesting, it's more unfortunate that now more than ever, getting that work-life balance in terms of being left alone when you clock out.
Sure.
That seems less likely than ever.
Sure.
Because of the current climate.
Sure,
companies
really
need to make money. And when they want to make money, they don't care about your time.
They do. They don't.
And based on that, I think something businesses need to adopt and they need to really understand is, yes, COVID allowed us to communicate via a wide array of new streams. WhatsApp no longer became a personal platform. They decided to adopt it as a...
blurred.
The line has become very, very blurred. And you seem like a bit of a... I'm going to use this language, a dick, when you tell people, don't contact me on WhatsApp. Don't contact me after hours. Whereas for them, it becomes a means of communication. It's contractually, it doesn't work like that, guys. We've got platforms like Teams. We've got platforms like
formal professional
Slack, I think.
I was going to mention now. Yeah, I use that for previous
and
company.
And I guess ClickUp's a new one as well.
Exactly. So people need to find those boundaries. And those boundaries being set now, it's one of those things as well where often you are ostracized and looked at not really being a team player if you're the one who's pushing back on certain things. But
like
that's
you putting
in
lazy.
Exactly.
Like you're failing to show initiative. You're not putting in that extra effort that will get you quote unquote clout in the office.
Exactly. Do you guys think that's failure of the type of management or failure of the system?
I think
both.
Yeah, it's a bit of both. I think like you mentioned with the whole COVID thing, it blurred the lines of communication. It also blurred the windows of like, when are you productive? So we would be on longer, but our work would be broken up more kind of around life. And COVID also gave us a new appreciation for that work-life balance and realizing, you know, what is important, especially with people losing loved ones. And especially if you don't work in an industry where people's lives are genuinely dependent on you, I feel like having that workplace boundaries is so important, especially if you have a contracted amount of hours you're supposed to work. You should be like, these are my hours, especially now if you are back in office or you are hybrid, you need to stick to those hours, because if you're productive for those hours and you're delivering on time, there shouldn't be legally an issue.
And also a question, who of you guys have either Teams or Outlook or both on your phone?
I used to. I'm the type of person who had all of it. But what I did coming back this year, I literally removed everything.
Thank you.
And that was a conscious decision.
I was actually, because last year when I found out I have the cholesterol, the heart, and literally,
that's burnout.
One of my colleagues told me, so remove it from your phone, because they're going to bother you. And when you go on your phone, you're driving home.
You're going to feel compelled to reply.
You're driving home, you're listening to music, and you just scroll down, and it's just Outlook messages and Teams messages. someone calling you. And I'm so happy. I feel way more stress relieved from removing those two apps from my phone.
So to speak on what you said, Mr. G, about the lines being blurred with WhatsApp in particular, for the longest time, while I've been at the company, I've been in charge of handling everybody's email signatures, right? Long, tedious process. My God, I hate it. I'm so glad I'm done with it forever. But something that I was very conscious of when I started here is that I don't want to be contacted on my mobile telephone. I don't want work people contact me on my telephone. If you want to contact me, my email's there, Teams is there. There's no reason for employees to be on my phone. That's my personal space. WhatsApp is my personal space. So much so to the point where I think like a year or two into my employment at the company, I took my my cell phone number out of my signature because I don't want people to contact me there. There's, you have no business contacting me after hours.
Another good thing I'll probably do.
On that note as well, I think a lot of us had the mistake because you, especially as creators, because you have this I'm going to say unrealistic drive to where you're always looking for a certain level of perfection or a certain level where you are happy with your product. Exactly. You end up making yourself accessible to everyone all the time, which is very dangerous to the point where inaccessibility is probably the most important thing in any space and any environment, because that's where you get your peace of mind. And just before we get to your notes, I remember at some point we had the discussion as well. And that's the one thing you said to me is take a break. And I realized I'm like me literally just switching off my phone or me just saying out of office isn't enough there are those colleagues who are going to break those boundaries. Definitely. And because they're under whatever pressure they're in, they break your boundary.
I try to put that pressure onto you now.
Exactly. And which goes back to us having to be selfish when you need to. That's the reality of it. The reality is that we might work as a business. I'm giving my 120%, but the reality is you've got your own contract. I've got my own contract. When it comes to crunch time,
100%.
I've met my targets. I've done what I need to do.
Exactly.
So my boundaries need to be respected.
Mm-hmm. No. Okay. No, I just wanted to bounce off of what Brent said over here about the... I just wanted to confirm I was saying the right name. About the cell phone number in the signature. I used to have it as well. And I think a few years ago we had a client campaign with a client that was very particular. And some people are very hasty when they feel that pressure's on them, like you mentioned. Or if they feel there's a delay on their side, so it becomes an urgency on your side. And that's never the case for me. I'm like, why are you delaying? I am off the clock.
Exactly.
That client used to call me directly in the middle of a day, even though that's not the proper channels to go through. They need to go through a specific manager and that gets funneled down, da 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 da.
Yeah.
But they were calling me to shout at me on the phone over stuff that had yet to be processed or checked or approved and things like this. And I was like, why are clients contacting me? After that, I never put my cell phone number back in again. I've changed signatures a few times since then. And when they give the template, I delete the cell phone number section because there used to be a landline we used to have at every desk.
Yeah, that's just the only
fine. That was the only thing I was fine putting in there because contact me at a work phone.
Exactly.
But where you are at your work cell phone.
Yeah. Exactly.
As for the apps, I have, this is why I took one of the devices we got sent before from work, just to put the work apps on so that when I'm at work or if I'm on the road, if something is urgent, I can check it, but I mute all of my chats. Yes. That's my toxic trait.
How do you guys think we navigate this? Because a lot of this, in my opinion, goes back to the type of management structures you're dealing with. How do you nurture or build the type of communication stream with your manager for them to understand that, listen, this works for me, this doesn't work for me. Yes, I might be new to a system, maybe, and this is how you guys do things, but this infringes on a lot of what I'm against.
Just communicate it, probably. Yes.
Yeah. So to answer that question, I'm going to agree with Jacob, thank you, and say that communication and transparency from the start is vital, because if there's any kind of ambiguity there or any kind of uncertainty, then you're setting yourself up to be exploited and taken advantage of. And this forms part of another thing that I want to respond to what you said, Mr. G, about that perfectionism as creatives, not necessarily as creatives, but just like people who are passionate about our work, regardless whether that's creative or otherwise. There's a lot of attention to detail. There's a lot of pride in your work, and there's a lot of the kind of thought process that this is my baby, like I'm in charge of this, it needs to be perfect. Not by these other guys' standards, by my standards. I need to get this right. If it's not right, I'm not happy. And that is a kind of mindset that gets exploited by employers. And it's not so much like, even if you can push back on pressure, even if you can push back on people contacting you in your personal time, the thing that often gets me and gets other people is that ownership that you have over your the work that you put out. It's that if somebody tells you, at like 8 o'clock at night, oh, this thing that you created, there's an issue, there's an error, or there are some client changes that need to be actioned. Even if you tell them, hey, I can't do this right now, I'm having dinner with my family or whatever, or I'm out of the house right now, I'm on a Tinder date, it's going horribly, this guy just farted in the restaurant.
Wow.
Whatever it is, right? You're going to feel that sort of like that guilt, that anxiety hanging over you the entire time, like knowing that this thing that I put out there, it's messed up, it's not what it should be.
Yeah.
And that's like going to weigh on you the entire time. And that's right there, I feel like.
So. And that's very manipulative for the people who know how to hone that. And now,
and exploitative as well.
Exactly. So how do you, I've got a weird belief, and it's a belief that I was reinforced with the team I'm coming from.
I love it. Let's go.
And my belief is that once in your career, only once in your career, do you come across a team and a manager who wants the best for you as well and the best out of you. And that comes in that manager saying that, okay, cool, I draw the line with this thing, take a break.
Mm.
You know, or he doesn't have capacity, he's going to burn out. Who pushes you to take that leap because they see the future potential in you and they know how to open it. And I think a lot of managers, especially in the business we work in, don't have proper training with how to deal with issues like that.
Great.
Shout out to my previous manager. She's amazing. I would go to war with her. Everyone knows this. I would literally
go to war with her.
For her and with her.
He's taking away.
For her and with her. She is flipping amazing. She's pushed me beyond limits and barriers I never thought. Even doing this.
Yeah.
Like sitting and voicing an opinion, sitting and being able to be part of a podcast and share things the way we share, expanding my language, that's because of a push she initiated within me.
Yeah, just to kind of tack on that and a bit of what Brent said earlier. If I'm emphasizing the name too much.
That's fine. It's hilarious. I love it.
But I wanted to say, like, about the management styles and all of that, you know, it comes down again to the colors, those personality colors. It's like what drives you. So it's the green, the blue, the red, and the yellow. Greens are very, like, perfectionist driven. It's like, I want to feel like the work I put out is good. So you do have that sense of guilt.
I'm not a green. That's hilarious.
Anyway, but and then a lot of the managers tend to be very red driven. But like you said, Mr. G, it's like you have a team, and I've been managed before by people that are very meticulous over either time or only wanting work out in a way that they themselves would put it out, whether or not it's good quality or not, who've been very like overbearing in that regard. But then, I've had managed a team where I had a lot of freedom and a lot of trust, and I think it allowed me to grow probably the most because of that space.
Once you have that, you can strive for yourself and for the team as well.
So I think it's safe to say to all the managers out there who are listening, the best way to motivate your team is trust. Micromanagement doesn't work.
Definitely.
And allowing them the freedom to express themselves.
True.
Where you give them a voice as well.
And allow them to fight for you as you fight for them as well.
Exactly. Trust. Nothing beats a team that trusts each other and good communication.
Exactly.
Because by nature, it becomes easier for those employees and those colleagues to say, okay, you need something after hours. It'll take me 10 minutes. I don't mind
doing
it.
You understand.
Yeah. I don't mind doing it. Whereas if you're a tough manager and you micromanage, even if it's a 10-minute job, there's going to be more resistance to do it.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate here and say that it doesn't always work that way. Like, I do agree being an enabling manager, but that's not the term that I'm looking for. Across the board, people don't like micromanaging. However, I will say that in many instances, giving people complete freedom is also going to be a screw up because not everybody thrives under freedom. Sometimes people need that pressure to get their shit done.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
So as much as we're adults, some of us aren't really complete adults.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's, for a lot of managers, it's much easier and more efficient for them to just like do the same treatment across the board.
Mm.
Keep everything monotonous, keep everything consistent. That's easy to track, it's easy to control, it's easy to read feedback from and see results from, whether that's positive or negative. It's easy to see the effects of it. Whereas I think what you are saying is that instead of micromanaging, not necessarily give people all the freedom in the world, but treat them as individuals.
Yeah.
Like the people who need pressure will get the pressure. People who need positive reinforcement will get it. The people who need positive critique will get it. Mm. The people who have, how can I say, the inspiration or the creativity to thrive with freedom and to expand with freedom should get that. And if by treating your employees as individuals, you can get the best out of each one. But not every manager is good at that.
I completely agree.
That's why
they
generalize, I think.
I completely agree. And I think this is where the recruitment process comes in now, in terms of finding the right fit.
Exactly.
There's a reason certain systems and other businesses will go through a 5-stage interview to see how you actually fit with the team, to see what your engagement is. And that's why, for instance, with me, virtual interviews don't really work, you know, because virtual interview, it's easy enough to fake something. Mm. Whereas in person, you get true reflection of the person's energy, the tone, how they carry themselves. Yes, it's a very it's a pressuring environment, but I think that's the best type of reflection of that person you're going to get, because once you put someone under pressure, that's when the true self comes out.
Yeah. My anxiety fucking loves online interviews.
Yeah. So, and I used to say to my partner, she'd ask me, why do I prefer in-person interviews? Because I found a way within my interviews to turn it into a conversation.
I'm not here
based on my CV. You've seen my CV. Everything you want to know about me, you'll find on LinkedIn.
Exactly.
But you're here to get to know me
exactly.
right now.
Exactly. As a person, if I fit into your team, to the culture, into the vibe, culture, you know.
Exactly.
So on that note about interviews being a conversation, I 100% agree. And that's something that I think in the past, like, I've always been on a kind of a on the back foot, like in a beggars can't be choosers kind of situation where I'm unemployed, I've been retrenched. Like every single job I've been at so far, I've been retrenched at the fucking capitalism is a horror. And I've always been at the back foot and kind of like taking what I can get because I like being able to afford to live. Okay. And what I'm taking forward with future job interviews is that it should be a two-way street. As much as they're trying to suss me out, I need to suss them out as well. Yeah. Like I'm the kind of guy where if I'm thinking about a thing in the future, like I'll run quote-unquote simulations in my head, like I'll envision how it's going to play out and I envision what I'm going to say and like sort of like mentally prepare myself for what's going to happen. And one of the things that I envision myself asking is like the things we've mentioned in this podcast so far, like what are the work hours like, what's the company culture like, how are the boundaries drawn when it comes to after hours work, like what did the last person in this position, why did they leave, like you know, those kind of questions that help you suss out what your experience will be at this company before you sign up blindly because, oh, it's your dream job, it's a dream position.
And you need money.
Yeah, it's like, as great as those things are, it doesn't matter as much as you think it matters in comparison to how it's going to make you feel because you spend so much of your life at that job.
Very true.
Like Jacob was talking about with how burnout was affecting his health.
Oh.
What does money matter if you're wasting away because of dying at your job?
I love that you touched that because so many of us go into interviews or new environments out of a certain level of desperation.
Yeah. That's like you're at their mercy.
You're desperate to move to leave from a system that was either toxic. You're desperate to create a better life for yourself.
It's basically like a rebound date.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of us also tend to wait until we are forced to look for new opportunities or to like update and consider them. But I'm the kind of person that's like, you need to always just be scoping the market, whether you're ready to leave or not, just to see what's out there and how you fare with other people in your
shopping job.
Yeah.
No, you can't. I also believe that you constantly need to be weighing out how you sit in the market.
Mm. Yep.
That's a reality, and that's how you understand your worth as well. Not saying every 6 months if there's an increase or every 6 months if there's a change in the industry, you're like, ah, guys, time to renegotiate. Obviously, there's limits around that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But don't also forget about that. Don't neglect yourself as well. Another thing that you mentioned earlier, Mr. G, is how, I can't remember what specifically the context was in, but it was along the lines of advocating for yourself and feeling selfish when you do that. And what I meant to say at that point was that I don't think it is selfish And again, it's a two-way street. It's you are rendering services in exchange for financial compensation.
Mm.
They're getting something out of you. You're getting something out of them. So the same way that they will come to you and tell you something is the same way that you should go to them and tell them something. Like, hey, I've been on LinkedIn. It's a cringe platform. It's corny. I don't like the UI, but I've been there, and the job listings, the numbers aren't adding up. Like my contract and this job listing, I've got those qualifications. I've got those years of experience. Why doesn't my paycheck look like this?
Mm.
You know, I think that's fair. And I think we need to start changing our mindsets of, like I said, being at the company's mercy, where it's like we walking to them with our hat in our hand, like begging, like, please, sir, can I have some more? Like, no, can you give me what I deserve in this market? Like, pay me what I'm worth, instead of, like, you know, trying to cut costs by underpaying your employees. If you're doing that, then your business model is shit. Like, if you're banking on underpaying your employees in order for your company to turn a profit, like, your company is shit. That's a poor business model. You're fucking up as a CEO.
Very true.
Shots
Very
fired. True.
I'm not naming no names. To add on to that, the people that stick around in these companies where employees are constantly leaving and
especially
returning,
especially the bottom
money,
line.
The people that keep doing that stick around are either the people that are benefiting most from it, who are making the most money and doing the exploiting, or it's the people that are exploited the most and either don't have any options, or they are so committed to doing their job well. They enjoy their job, they just don't enjoy the system
or
the
just,
remuneration.
Or they're just thinking about their family.
Priorities.
They
can't
have things that's in the background. I can't give this job up. I'm going to lose everything. They have to double think everything what they do before.
And it goes back to confidence as well.
Definitely.
Confidence and fear
and
of leaving and starting fresh.
Your potential also.
Yeah, 100%.
No, very true. Very, very true. It's for me, the moment you come into a system and within the first month, like two colleagues are leaving, following month another colleague is leaving, three colleagues are leaving. Those are red flags.
That's huge. You know,
your staff turnover is a reflection of a failing system. That's
definitely. And you're not changing it, Aibu.
That's what I believe. And for you to sit and be arrogant and it sounds like I'm speaking directly to someone. Right? For you to sit and be arrogant, where you believe that the system's not going to change because it's been working, doesn't necessarily mean it's been working.
Exactly.
It's working. It means that it's not
working
for you.
Yeah.
It's not meant to work for you. Hey, Alfred.
But just to reel it back though, so we've touched on failing systems, the fact that it's a balance between how the system operates, how people should communicate, and the type of management. Now we all understand that there's a certain level of confidence as well, and a certain level of go for it.
I remember the thing. So you're talking about arriving, starting at a new company and seeing people leave as well, right?
Mm.
So when I started here, for the record, I'm the last designer from the OG team that's here. Everybody else is gone.
Mm.
And even of the new people, there are two people left. So that in itself is crazy, but not even to the present yet. Let's go back to the past. Let's do a little throwback on a Wednesday. So when I started here, right, immediately two designers left, and then the manager left, and then soon after another designer left, and then it's like the whole team was refreshed. They saw something that they were all discussing that the rest of us didn't see. We couldn't see. We just started. So we weren't aware of it. We weren't conscious of it. But as time passed, that revolving door thing got brought up. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I thought that was just corporate.
Mm.
And then, that pattern was then established.
Yeah.
It was an ongoing pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And persists to this day.
Yeah, like Brent mentioned. I don't know
Mentioned, yeah.
Brenton.
Like Brenton on my left, yeah. Basically, when I joined my last team, it was, and Brent can attest to this, a very different team. And now I think two of us are only still on that team. But I think that was also to speak to the management of the team at the time. I think a lot of people were not satisfied as I joined. Well, as I joined, people were leaving or on their way out or being like, oh, I'm at my 3-year mark, and which sounded like a decent amount of time at the time until I realized now I've been here 5 years.
Cap it at 2 years, man. Always cap it at 2 years.
So yeah, I was like, okay, everyone's kind of leaving. What does that mean? What does that mean for me? But obviously as time went on and a new management came in and things got a little bit better, things looked up hopeful, I suppose.
Mm.
But yeah, I should have maybe had taken some more attention to the people that were
even with me. Also, I started, the December before that started. One, two, three, four, five people left.
Mm.
And I was like, why? Yeah. I asked myself why, and I asked around and no one wanted to give me answers until I went through months upon months and just stood asking around. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, okay, now I see.
I think the one thing that keeps resonating in my head while we're having this discussion is, and it's such an unfortunate thing, unless it's your business or a family business, working for someone else, we need to know how much to give and how much to not give.
Yeah.
You know?
You have to have that balance.
In what regard do you mean?
If it's not my own personal business.
If it's not my baby.
I can't be giving 200%.
Because
I'm expandable, and that's a reality.
So then are you comfortable with that 120% that you mentioned you giving earlier?
I'm not comfortable, but unfortunately that's my nature. When I sit,
see, it's that fucking, it's that guilt, it's that ownership on the job, that desire for perfection, that pride in your work, that you're getting exploited for.
Exactly.
Mm.
That's why they want you.
Because you also built that kind of like work ethic with your former manager, I think, and where you felt a lot more fulfilled in your role. So you felt, I don't mind giving that 20% extra. But now you shift teams and you're like, do you deserve that 20% extra?
And I think with other systems as well, where you do have a little bit of freedom, you tend to be able to see what's available and what's out there. You're able to shape your own career path and your own future. You're able to sit down and say, okay, cool, maybe I might not just be the guy who's designing for the next 2-3 years. Maybe I might move into a creative direction role where I've got more freedom now to delve into multimedia. Maybe I might not be the guy who's just holding the camera recording and I'm out.
OnlyFans still account.
Sorry?
What?
OnlyFans still account.
With an OnlyFans account. maybe there's a potential for me to end up as a director at some point in time. You know,
I see that Tony you. Fans.
You know, you shape that future for you. But once again, it's a give and take.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to be able to be put in a position where they can see that potential in you and they allow you to grow and take charge of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the larger the business and the larger the team, the more ring-fenced you become. You know, the more isolated you become, and because now it becomes difficult to even pay attention to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you fall into the background. Yeah, you fall into the background. That's why I've always loved much smaller teams.
Mm.
As abusive as the system might be in terms of you doing everything, but it's an opportunity for you to grow as an individual.
Exactly.
And try new things.
In terms of taking charge of your career, I feel that I'm ripe for being exploited. And I feel like that's shown in my career as well, because that pride in your work, that ownership, that anxiety when jobs are hanging, that desire to get it done quickly, efficiently, and perfectly as often as possible.
Mm.
It benefits me because there's a lot of people that trust my output now, right? And that's great. That feels great for my self-confidence. Mm. But the problem is that I'm very bad at advocating for myself. The only times that I've, most of the times where I've been reminded of my worth or of my skill or of my proficiency or whatever is when other people are pointing it out.
Mm.
Like, I'm very rarely like satisfied with my work. Like I always feel like I could have done that better. Actually, now that I'm looking at it again, you know, I actually fucked up there. I should have done X instead of Y. Like I'll nitpick it like that. But like when other people look at it, they'll be like, oh, that's actually really good. You did that? No, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to like advocating for myself, and I'm put on the spot, I'm like, okay, so why should we give you an increase? Like, why should we pay you more? And what I should be doing is being like, this is what I've done here. This is how well I did here. This is the consequences of that decision that I made here. Here's a list of all the people who fucking love my work, and here's the email threads to prove it.
Here's awards from my work.
Here's all the awards that we've racked up over the years. I'm just like,
awkward about it.
Yeah, it's like, I can't upsell myself. What am I, an asshole?
Yeah. The conclusion I've come to over the past couple of months as a creative is we'll never be happy. Mm-mm. You'll never be 100% happy with whatever you put out.
I was a boss. I would love to exploit people like that.
Yo, and the
wow. You shouldn't be agreeing with it.
This is a toxic cycle of corporate work.
This is how it happens. This is how it happens. And the reality of it, the only real gratification we get out of it is once other people are happy.
Yeah.
As the creator, I'll never be happy. But once I see the joy it brings you,
once I see a lovely email or team's that message makes me being happy. This is and so amazing.
Exactly.
Have you ever had a moment where you make something and you show it to someone, right?
Mm.
And then they take it and they look at it and they're like, they go around to other people to show them. Yeah.
I feel like a lapdog.
That happened. When was it? I think a year back for me. And I think as creatives as well, especially when you have a desire for perfection,
mm-hmm.
you have a certain complex about yourself where every now and then you're like, this doesn't look great. It doesn't look how I wanted it to look, or it's not at the level I thought, to the point where you're even scared to put it out there. It took one of my friends who I've been friends with him for a while, and he never really understood what I do for a living.
Mm. I get that with my family and friends all the time.
It took me sitting him down, opening up my portfolio and him going through everything for him to say, fucking hell, dude, why are you still working for those guys? Why are you still working for those guys? Like, you should be consulting, or you should have had your own production company going like a year. Not even now, like years ago. Like, your portfolio is mad.
When are you going to hire?
Because I've been asking that for the past 50 years.
It's coming.
Is it?
Yeah. Watch the space, guys. No, it's coming.
You know, hold you accountable now. The timeline.
I'm gonna say another thing. I'm gonna bring the little man in here as well. The day my son was born, right?
Yeah.
My personal ambitions, my personal ideas went out the window. I understood what needed to be done in terms of taking care for him. At the same time, I understood that I need to start expanding myself.
You have to.
And to secure some form of inheritance for him.
Mm.
And that's
trust fund stuff.
Exactly. That's where, in terms of doing my own thing, something's in the works. Doesn't mean I'm going to leave the company I'm working with right now, for those who are listening. But something's
But he's always expanding like a butterfly chicken.
Yes. We need to expand ourselves. We need to push ourselves.
Mm.
You know? In wrapping off, guys, this was an interesting one.
Before we wrap, just to say, maybe I'm backtracking, when we were talking about managers and the impact that it has on people, just advice for any new people in the workplace, and maybe this is me because I take things very personal. I'm a very sensitive person.
Hmm.
And I think when I started working, I took bad or poor management very personal.
Oh, yes.
I felt like they hate me. And I mean, in the back of my mind, sometimes it's like, this person hates me. But now I don't care about it as much, because I realize it's more a reflection on them and their own work insecurities than yourself.
Mm.
So if they're pedantic about time, or if they're pedantic about why their work doesn't mirror their own style, it's really not personal. It's just they need corporate therapy,
A lot of overcompensating, and there's a lot of insecurity, and that shit gets projected onto other people a lot of the time. People will be dickheads. They will make you feel bad about your output and what you produce and about how you manage yourself, even though they seem to be the only person who's feeling a way about it, the only person who's vocal, the only person with an issue.
Both.
Just learn to trust your instinct, reflect on what you have done.
Mm.
If there's a way to measure the success of what you've done, what you've accomplished, hold on to that. Don't let people shit on your work and your process. If it's a bit different, if it works, don't let people Santana said, you know, people cage you in because things are different because they're dickheads a lot of projection, a lot of insecurity.
Yeah, and maybe just tell your manager that if there is an issue, they should communicate.
Nigga, fuck off.
They should communicate just it communicate up front before sending an email with HRCC'd in unprovoked, which happened to me on two separate previous occasions in former roles.
Yeah.
I'm just snitches.
Yeah, just communicate probably from my perspective. Communicate better, let the manager, whatever situation needs to be sorted out, let the manager communicate with you.
Before we take it to emails,
phone me,
sit me down one-on-one.
Advise me what I must do and then whatever issues I have and then go from there.
Okay, print.
I'm raising my arm all the way up for this because this is a moosey thing. Enjoy it while it lasts, it won't be here again.
Go for it.
Keep a paper trail.
Oh, yes.
Because like with the thing with informing your manager, like that's always very important. Like firstly, don't fuck around.
Yeah.
So that when you're accused of anything or when somebody says some shit, that you in the right. Don't fuck around. Don't do dumb shit. Right? And when there is a dispute, always keep it in email. Don't do phone calls with people that have beef with you. Don't have conversations around the corner. Don't do it while you're having a smoke on break. Fucking keep it in email.
Go on,
keep screenshots because people will delete the messages.
Exactly. Or edit them.
Don't
keep
WhatsApp.
All the evidence. And when there's a hint of a dispute, go to your manager, make them aware of it. If they don't do shit, go straight to HR. Because your manager's job is to manage. If they aren't managing, if they aren't settling this shit, go straight to HR. If your manager is a lazy ass, then fucking go to HR. If other people don't have your back, then you need to have your own. Because this shit will get legal.
Exactly.
And because you are in an environment where people are trying to make their money, either to further their career,
it gets brutal,
or to earn a living, people can get really fucking cutthroat.
Yeah.
And you have to protect yourself. So always keep a paper trail. Always have evidence. Always keep things on record.
Okay, so disregard the pull me aside and tell me. Just tell me on Teams.
Yeah.
I
think
again, that's why I don't have your WhatsApp number in your email signature.
Yeah.
No.
It needs to be a message so you can
remove my
channel.
On a work
channel. I'm going downstairs.
Mr. G, you can wrap up.
Yeah, I think to wrap up my side, for anyone else who's starting to join the workforce and starting their careers, like the guys have mentioned, communication, extremely important. You're going in there to learn as well. So go in as a sponge. There's great opportunities in a wide variety of industries. It's not going to be what you imagined straight out of school or from whatever environment you're coming out of. It's never that at all. So go in there with an open mind. And most importantly, find a mentor. If you can find, whether it's an older colleague who's been there longer, who's willing to teach you, who's willing to walk with you, extremely important. Nothing can replace a good mentor.
Take the best traits from the people that are better than you.
Exactly.
And also, just communicate and be a nice person to everyone, because if someone's cucked to you, that's on them.
That's on them, yeah. It doesn't mean you have to be cucked.
Yeah. And if you are in a position of managing other people, you know, just remember the things you didn't like. And
don't
be a brown-noser.
Exactly. And should you ever feel confused, a motto I live my life by is add value. Wherever you go, add value. Whether it's in a family space, whether it's in a workspace, whether it's in a social space, add value. So that when you walk away, you leave people with a smile.
Fought in a lift.
Break the ice.
See, everybody smiled. Yeah. Break the ice, break the aircon, everything.
Brent's already breaking the aircon right now.
Awesome, guys. This was episode 1 of 2024. And as we end off the month of January, I'd just like to thank everyone for listening in, and to our special member who's joining us for the first and last time,
potentially,
as he is following other great opportunities in a different environment. But we'll definitely have him back as a guest speaker on one of our other episodes.
And to recruiters, he is available to hire. Contact Brent.
Definitely.
By email. Don't call me. Don't fucking call me.
Paper trail.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the views of any other individual or organization. The hosts are not experts in any of the topics discussed, and their advice should not be taken as medical, legal, or financial advice.